Hi, everyone. It's Nick. So I said last time that I thought our show went on a little long. So, of course, we go and we make a new episode that is even longer. You know what's not long? The game that we are talking about today. Dedeus does not take long to beat, and it's very focused on story. And so it was very hard for us to talk about this game without giving a lot of the plot away. We will drop a big spoiler alert right before we start talking about the endings, which we are going to do. So you can skip that part if you want to when we get to it. But if you are the type of person who does not want to know anything about a game's story before you play it, you might want to put off this episode until you've had a chance to play through the game. Otherwise, enjoy, and I think this is a good talk, and we had a good time with it. If you like the show, please tell your friends about it and leave us a review. Thanks, and here we go. This is the Homebrew Game Club, a podcast about modern, brand new, aftermarket video games for retro consoles. On this podcast, we pick one game a month to play and talk about. Today's game is Dedeus for the Game Boy. My name is Nick, also known as Divertov, and joining me today are...
Bart, also known as Clever Username Needed on Instagram.
And Connor Nash, also known as CONORNASH on Twitter.
Is that how you pronounce it? You spell out every single letter? Christ, what a pain in the ass. Are you serious?
Everyone's going to think it's C-O-N-N-E-R or C-O-N-N-O-R or some other weird spelling. So, God forbid.
What you're doing, you're just asking people to sound it out like by letter whenever they say your name.
Yeah, basically. I think that's an appropriate price to pay, for my opinion.
That is incredibly pedantic. I love it. All right, great. Before we get started, I would like to remind everyone on this podcast that we believe in honest opinions, but we also understand that many of these games are not made by professionals. They are labors of love. Also, as a note to our listeners, we are not game developers ourselves. We are just fans. So please keep that in mind as we offer up any criticisms of these games. So I kind of got the sense from talking to you guys that this might be a little bit of an inverse of the Lizard episode in that the two of you seem to really like this game, whereas I might be a little more lukewarm on it.
I'll tell you what Connor told me while you were getting a beer is this is my favorite game we've reviewed so far.
Yeah.
Wow.
Out of the two.
Your favorite out of the two games we've reviewed so far. This is definitely your favorite. All right.
Definitely.
Right up there. Yeah. No, I like this game a lot. And, yeah, I'm kind of stoked to talk about, especially the music part of it. I just really, I don't know, I got all spooked by it. I feel kind of spooked.
I mean, that's good. So we picked this game. It was like the week before Halloween.
Yeah, yeah.
And you guys reached out to me and you were like, hey, do you know any like scary homebrew games that we could play for Halloween? And this one was immediately the one that came to mind. I think it was a really great one for Halloween. I think it's a little bit weird that we're posting this in January. I don't know, you know, if January is a great month for horror, but I don't know. You know, I think it works. It's fine. Okay. So what kind of experiences have you guys had with the Game Boy before we get started? Because I can say, thinking about this, I had to really remember what my history was with the Game Boy. Connor, we've kind of heard about yours in the intro episode.
Yeah.
Did you actually have a Game Boy?
No, I never had a Game Boy, but it was always, I think it was a bit more of an accessible console than an NES. For some reason, more people I knew had a Game Boy. Maybe it was slightly cheaper. Maybe it was the fact that you didn't have to monopolize the family television because there was usually only one. Maybe it was, you know, some of the titles for it, like Tetris, where I know there were like adults who got really into games like Tetris. But yeah, I had a couple of friends who had Game Boy, and I remember the titles really well, like Super Mario World, Super Mario World 2, both amazingly good games, but also just radically different from each other.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And kind of radically different from any of the other Mario games. DuckTales, which I think was a pretty much a port from the NES, but I only knew it from the Game Boy.
It's a very good port.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And there was a soccer game as well that was actually a lot of fun. A I forget the name of it, but Super Soccer or something like that. There was something just really, I don't know, like instantaneous about it, like even more so than the NES, where you could just like pick it up, turn it on, and like straight away you're there, you're in the game. And it's your own little world. You can go into a little corner and play with it. I ended up getting a Game Gear kind of for a couple of other reasons. I was mostly really interested in the technology around the TV tuner for the Game Gear, which I thought was amazing. But that's kind of a story for another day. So anytime I ended up swapping my Game Gear for a Game Boy, which I did multiple times, I would always kind of think to myself, wow, Game Boy has better games. Like the Game Gear is like technically really interesting, but I always thought that the Game Boy was definitely the superior gaming console.
Yeah, it's interesting that you're talking about anybody can pick it up and play it. I remember just being completely struck by going to visit my grandmother, and she had gotten really into Game Boy. And she had like a whole little case, like some of my friends did, same kind of case and everything. And it had puzzle games. It had like Tetris. It had Bugs Bunny's Crazy Castle and, you know, some of these other Boxel and some of these other games. And it just really struck me because I had never seen an adult of that age have any interest at all in video games until that moment. Mm. And it's something I think about a lot when I look at casual games and people who would never call themselves a gamer in any capacity. Like my wife, for example, who is completely addicted to Two Dots, you know, but she would never say that she plays video games.
Right.
But she'll spend like hours a day on fucking Two Dots, you know, mm-hmm. which is a video game.
It's very addictive.
That, I think about that a lot when I think about mobile gaming and just its appeal of something like the Game Boy. Bart, what were you going to say?
Oh, no, I was just going to talk about my experience with the Game Boy. I think we got one the Christmas that it came out, and I remember we got Tetris and Super Mario Land, and Tetris was the one that we all played. I mean, even my dad played it, I think, and then, like, that was unheard of for him to play a video game. The thing about, I know, Connor, you were like, oh, let's just take the Game Boy and go curl up in a corner and play. It was like, yeah, but you better have a lamp in that corner, because... You can't see the screen. Yeah. I remember like thinking, man, I wish I could play this like in bed with the lights off, because it'd be really cool to do that. But you couldn't. Like I tried a couple of times, and I remember I could play for like 5 minutes because I'd have a flashlight in my mouth trying to hold it and point it at the screen and playing Tetris. And my mom would be like, it's time to go to bed. I'm like, I'll be right back. You know, and I remember playing Super Mario Land and beating it, loving it. That's cool. But for the most part, the Game Boy for me and for my family was the puzzle-related, more casual games like Tetris, Dr. Mario, stuff like that. And I know my neighbors had one, and we actually used to get together on my front porch with the little, whatever the wire was that connected the two Game Boys together, and you could play two-player Tetris. And that blew my mind that there was a two-player Tetris. And then my cousin was like, oh, I have two-player Tetris. It's made by Tengen. You can just play it on the Nintendo. I'm like, no, come on.
He's right.
Oh, I know it was, but it was also, he was like you. His dad owned a video rental store. So they had all kinds of stuff.
He was a fancy man. Did just everybody in the Midwest have parents or relatives that own video rental stores?
Only the special kids.
Yeah, we were special.
God damn, dude.
But it was really cool. That was my experience with the Game Boy. It was like, it was used mostly for whoever wasn't on the Nintendo. Like, they could use the Game Boy, and we usually plugged it in. Yeah, we usually plugged it in because I didn't want to have to buy 4 AA batteries every day. That was just ridiculous. I do remember one time when we went on a vacation, we made a special trip to Dollar General to get a big pack of AA batteries so that we could play the Game Boy in the car without having to worry about it, you know, dying all the time. And I do remember playing the hell out of the Game Boy. And I bought a Game Boy Advance, you know, and I most recently bought that, what is it, like the little flip open one. I showed that to you, Nick.
You have the really cool one. You have the, it looks like an NES.
Yeah.
It's a Game Boy Advance SP that looks like an NES.
Yeah, yeah, much like my PS4 is a system that only plays Fortnite, and my Nintendo Switch for me is a system that only played Zelda Breath of the Wild. That Game Boy Advance only played The Legend of Zelda because that's the only game I bought for it.
This is Link's Awakening?
No. This was the original Legend of Zelda when they released it for the Game Boy. I was like, oh, cool, I'm going to play that again. Oh,
I didn't even know they did
that. I do have Link's Awakening now. I bought the Game & Watch at Christmas.
Oh, right.
I haven't played it yet. I've only played the original Legend of Zelda on it. I love
it. How is it holding that thing? It looks like it might be a little uncomfortable to hold for a long period of time.
So small. It's like playing a video game on a credit card. It's so little.
Huh.
But yeah, playing for a long time, no chance. Plus, the screen is about the size of 2 postage stamps. So it's more of a novelty than anything, but it is pretty damn cool.
Yeah, that's kind of how it felt. Well, so I was trying to remember my history with the Game Boy because I knew I had one, but I didn't remember a lot of the details. And so what I did is I went back and I tried to think of what games I had for it. And I know there were at least 5 that I had for sure. I had baseball, Tetris, tennis, Super Mario Land, and Alleyway. What do those 5 games have in common? No guesses.
No idea.
They were all the launch titles for the Game Boy in North America.
Really?
Yeah. So I think what happened is I got this thing for Christmas, and I must have picked up a bunch of games really early. Really, I played a lot of it right there in the beginning, and I think I had it for about a year. And what happened is I just really hated the screen. I could not stand the screen and the way that it looked and that like ugly, smudgy green, you know, the gray on green and that light contrast. And it always looked kind of like gross. It looked like snot or something to me. And as soon as a Game Gear came out, I was like, screw this thing. I got to have one of those. And I am pretty positive I sold it. I sold it to a friend or something like that. And I cashed in my allowance money and I got a Game Gear. And I do remember playing the Game Gear a lot. I don't remember having any good games for it. Right. I had like Mortal Kombat on Game Gear, which is maybe one of the worst iterations of Mortal Kombat, which I don't think is a great game anyway. Of course, that wasn't really a portable console. Connor, you and I were talking about this the other day, but the Game Gear was such a battery hog.
Yeah.
It took 6 AA's and it only had, it went through them in like 4 hours. So you'd have to plug it in. So one huge advantage that the Game Boy had is, yeah, it took the 4 AA's, but it had a battery life of like 15 to 20 hours, I think. So I will just say about this screen. So my COVID lockdown project, everybody kind of came up with like hobbies. My wife got really into making craft cocktails or whatever. I had picked up a Game Boy. One of my friends had given it to me, like one of his old Game Boys, and I got into modding it. So I learned how to solder. I taught myself how to solder just so I could mod this Game Boy. I replaced the screen on it. I tried to do a backlight. That didn't work. What that nasty green color on a Game Boy screen is actually a sticker. Huh. Yeah, the actual glass, the LCD glass is clear. The sprites are projected like inside of the glass. You see them because of this sticker that's on the back with a kind of adhesive. And to do the backlight, what you do is you have to peel off that sticker. The backlight is just, it's like a little canvas, but it lights up and you have to like slide that in underneath it. I tried to do that and I actually destroyed my screen because I could not desolder the ribbon cable and I fucked up the ribbon cable. So I just took that out and I put in an IPS screen, which is like a little LCD screen that is, it's like a modern screen on your Game Boy. And it looks fucking great. I think it looks great. Some people don't like it because it doesn't look accurate. I don't really care because I don't think the Game Boy ever looked good. So I don't care that it doesn't look accurate. But the thing is, like, I can see, it's like having a little TV screen now, like a modern TV screen inside of my Game Boy. And I can actually see the games now. And what I have discovered over the last 2 years now is that I actually do enjoy playing the games. Like, they're fun. But now that I can, like, actually see them...
No, I'm not stuck looking at snot.
So wait, you're saying that somebody who was working on the Game Boy said, you know what's going to make this better? Let's put a booger-colored sticker in front of the screen. Like, we could have had a gray Game Boy.
Yeah, or like any other kind of color. I don't know why they didn't put a light behind it. Because, I mean, you think they came out with that in 89, I guess, and the Game Gear was like 1990.
Right.
You know, the Game Gear had a fine screen. Like, even today, like, it holds up. It's not, it doesn't look like total shit or anything.
Why green? That's so weird. Is that because, like, the Apple II was, like, had the green?
No. Type? So, it made a lot more sense to me when I started looking at these old Game & Watches.
Yeah.
You know, like the LCDs on the Game Watch. Because it was basically just a souped-up Game & Watch, I think is what they had in mind when they made it. Mm-hmm. So, it's basically like a calculator screen with more advanced graphics. So yeah, they just, it's the same kind of backing. It's the same kind of backing that you'd get if you opened up like an old calculator and peeled off the sticker on the back of the glass. It would probably look exactly the same.
Yeah, true.
So that's why I never liked the Game Boy before, but because I hate that screen. And it, you know, we were talking about like high fidelity kind of retro gaming, and I want to play these games on the console that was designed for and all that stuff. Like, this is as close as I'm going to get with the modded screen, because I cannot stand that Game Boy screen. I have no interest in going back and playing it. It looks awful. I hate sitting under a light to play it.
Well, I mean, I played Dead AS on your modded Game Boy, and it was a joy, honestly. That Game Boy is amazing. You know, and my Game Boy's batteries used to last a little longer than the 10 to 15 hours, because if my dad ever heard the volume up, it would drive him crazy. He'd be like, how can you stand that? All I hear is, and he would do it until it got like super annoying. Oh, you like that? You like that? And it's just like, okay, I'll turn it down. It was so we could never play the Game Boy with the music up, which honestly started me down the road of playing a lot of Game Boy games and Nintendo games without listening to the music. Like, I'll be the first one to admit, I played Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time without listening. It was on mute, and I had the radio playing.
What? Gasp.
How?
Yeah, I did. I know. That's something I've never really admitted to anybody, but...
Do you realize in that game you have to play a musical instrument?
Yeah.
Were you able to do that, or did you just follow the buttons?
I followed the buttons.
That's amazing. I can't believe you admitted that on air.
I feel like you've been robbed of a particular kind of experience.
Oh, I totally have. I went back and played it. I did, because when I had the Wii, I got this game. This is also me and my search to play the original Legend of Zelda on every console I ever owned. So I had it for the Game Boy, or the Game Boy Advance, I guess. I had it for the regular NES. And when I got the Wii, or no, when I got the GameCube, I got this GameCube disc that had, it was two-sided, and on one side, I think it was two-sided. Anyways, it had The Legend of Zelda, Zelda 2, and it had Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask on it. And it was one big, like, all four games on one disc for the GameCube. So when I did get the GameCube, I went back and I played it with the music, and it is much better. But when I think of playing that Ocarina of Time, there's a certain playlist that goes through my head, and it was the, you know, playlist I had on my
that's hilarious.
Some mixtape that I used to throw on my cassette player back in the day, and turn on whenever I'd play that game. That's yeah, you're gonna learn all kinds of weird shit about me. I got all kinds of secrets.
I just feel sorry for you, dude. I'm like, oh,
that's, no, don't, like, feel sorry for me. I played it like it was supposed to be played. Eventually,
yeah.
Yeah, so did you? So we were using my Game Boy at the time. I fixed the headphone jack, but at the time the headphone jack did not work. So if you wanted to play, I did not mod the speaker. Mm-hmm. So it was the same crappy old tinny little speaker that the Game Boy had. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, I have to say, playing this game on the Game Boy with that speaker, I think really added to the experience, because there is something about the Game Boy that makes it feel like sort of a toy.
Yeah.
More than, I would say, any other handheld console, with a few exceptions. I think the Game Boy has always felt like a console that is made to be sort of a toy. I think that the game really plays off of that, the sort of inherent cutesiness of the Game Boy.
Totally agree.
In its look, where it sort of looks like a Pokemon game.
Kind of, yeah.
Totally agree. I think that's very
clever. I was watching some YouTube video. Somebody did a review of it, and they called it, this game is like one of these like copypastas where you like find some haunted Pokemon cartridge.
Yeah.
You put it in, and the monsters are all wrong or something, you know, and suddenly the game starts like speaking to you, or, you know, mm-hmm. Like, it does have that kind of feel. Like, there is something just inherently creepy about the look of the game combined with being on the Game Boy, I think really accentuates that creepy cute, I guess. Yeah. I want to call it.
I played it back in October, November, and because the only time that I could really ever play it was after I'd get home from work and everybody else was already at home. So I would take it and I'd go out on the porch after dinner and I would play it just like sitting out on my patio. And, you know, it's dark and I'm kind of in the woods and I'm playing this game outside and it got really creepy. It was actually really, really cool. It was because I wanted to, the headphone jack didn't work, so I couldn't put headphones on to play it. And I didn't feel like going upstairs and sitting in my bed and playing it. So I went outside because it was still warm out. And I thought, oh, it's going to start to get cold soon. So I might as well take advantage of the warmth. And as a result, yes, I played this game basically outside in the woods. By myself, and it nice. It really helped to with that.
It really helped put the shits up me.
What?
It put the shits up me. Great. Like, I mean, it's just like, and then I decided I'd, you know, while playing, go walk for a mile through the random forest, and I saw a light in the distance. Decided to follow it.
Yeah.
Just like whatever other like horror trope that you could have done. That's like the like. Oh, I'll just take a nice stroll at midnight and maybe go look into some mirrors and say Candyman three times while I'm doing it. I don't know. Like,
yeah, I went to the cellar of the abandoned house downstairs. Yeah.
Now, Connor, you played this, I'm assuming, on a laptop with an emulator. Was it a scary laptop?
Was it like an old Windows laptop that could die at any minute?
Oh, my God.
No.
Terrifying.
This is
a reference to my current computer.
This is why I'm lightly mocking Bart, because I'm trying to deflect from the fact that I am the like least authentic person here. I played this on an emulator. I enjoyed playing it on the I bought it on itch.
You were such a fucking poser.
I will defend my emulatorness on two angles. Number one, it meant that I could palette swap really quickly. I know you can do that, Nick, on yours, but that was really fun to palette swap when you like go into a different area of the game. And oh, say, okay. Like, oh, yeah, this is kind of like, fun. I want to see like this in a blue tone or, you know, a yellowy red tone.
Right.
And then we'll get into this later, but and this is probably going to be controversial. I did use frame skip a little bit.
Explain to the listeners what frame skip is.
So if you're walking in this game, just like Pokemon or, mm-hmm. you know, Link's Awakening, it can take a good 5 or 6 seconds to go from one end of the screen to the other end. You aren't doing anything on that screen. You just know where you need to go and you're just going across the screen. And that can get a little tedious when you know, you're just like walking around the map trying to find certain things. So a frame skip effectively says to the emulator, hey, how about instead of rendering the next frame, you just skip to the frame after that. So effectively what that does is it puts your game on like double speed. The music, the speed of what you're moving at, you know, how fast the enemies are moving. Everything just doubles in speed or more, depending on how many frames you choose to skip. But, you know, the standard would be like skip the next frame and go on to the one after it. Mm-hmm. And that effectively halves the amount of time it takes to get from one end of the screen to the other.
So it's like playing the game on turbo mode.
Yeah, kind of.
I was going to say, I'm surprised that you, as a person who's always likes to talk about the music, would do that to make the music play better.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I do, because I do like the music, but I guess I was also...
But it's like really coked up. It's super fast. I don't know. Yeah. Like for a horror game, I was like... Blah, blah, blah.
I think it's because I was so dead set on trying to get as many endings as possible.
Yeah, fair enough.
And I'm not going to defend this as being like the way to play the game. I will totally hear like if the creator comes out and says like, I slaughtered his creation and this was like completely the wrong way to play the game. I will admit that I just did this out of laziness. But I think it's because I was really dead set on trying to find as many endings as possible that I was just kind of like, okay, I've been through this first day before. Let's go, you know?
Yeah, but well, before we get to the gameplay, I do want to talk just very briefly about the Game Boy homebrew development scene. This game is actually the reason why I wanted to do a podcast about homebrew games and not just NES homebrew games, because NES is the system that I know. It's the homebrew scene that I know. But the reason I found out about this game is because many people that I follow in NES homebrew were talking about how great this game was and how interesting it was. I had not realized that there was all of this Game Boy homebrew development going on. You know, I saw like one or two games and I'm like, oh, that's cool. People are making games. I'm so glad that people are making games. And then I stumbled into this like Game Boy Studio scene. And it's insane the amount of development that's going on right now for the Game Boy. A lot of it seems to be based in Europe. It is using this GB Studio. It looks like Connor, you can probably explain this better than me, but it looks like sort of a suite of tools for creating a game. And it's WYSIWYG, you know, so it's mm-hmm. almost like a drag and drop kind of thing. And it gives you template assets to make a game with. And it is it has this incredibly inviting interface. I was watching some videos on it. I did get the actual software to open it up and play around with it a little bit. It has this very inviting kind of look.
Yeah. I'm looking at it right now on my screen. It's very, WYSIWYG. It looks very like you could just start playing with it right away. It also comes with a sample game, which I think is just like,
right.
There's a lot of stuff when it comes to software development where you can make the best piece of software ever, but if you don't give people clear examples of how to use it, they're not going to get on board with it. So the people who made this have obviously thought about like, okay, how are people going to start playing this? What's their like, reaction going to be when they see the thing start up for the first time? And the sample game is, it looks a little bit like a Pokemon Link's Awakening kind of game. So straight away, it makes a game like Deadeus seem feasible to somebody who is not a hardened homebrew developer.
Right.
Which I think is perhaps part of the reason, because it sounded like that the creator is not really known as being a creator of homebrew games. They're more of a musician or an illustrator and graphic designer.
Graphic designer, illustrator. Yeah, so the game was released in, I think it first came out in 2019, I believe. It got a physical release in 2020. As I said, it is Name Your Price on itch.io. It was created by a guy named Adam Birch, but he goes by Isma. And it was created during a game jam with some colleagues. I read an interview that he did, and they were just messing around with this GB Studio thing, and this game came out of it.
That's awesome.
It has to do with, I think that he had, like, this story. There is apparently, like, a whole, I don't know, you say, like, Deadeus, like, world, like, mythos, like the Cthulhu
lore.
Mythos or something. Like, yeah, the lore, right, yeah. That he had been working on for a long time, and this game was like just a small sample of that. It's been extremely well reviewed. I've seen it all over the place. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what the game is like to folks who maybe haven't played it yet. And I would just like to say, so you can't talk about this game, I think, without talking about the endings.
Yeah.
I do want to do that, and I want to talk about them in detail. I want to go over like every single ending because it also like it colored my experience of the game to play through the endings. But what we'll do is we'll just talk as much about the game as we want to, and then we'll put down like a spoiler alert. And then I want to go through the endings, and we'll put something in like a music bed or something where you can just kind of skip through once we get to that point if you don't want to hear the endings. Let's describe the game. What kind of game is this? We already said it looks like it's like creepy cute. It looks like a Pokemon style game, like the top down overworld kind of stuff. And I would say it's Pokemon, and it has these gruesome interstitials. Like it'll be Pokemon, and then all of a sudden it'll cut to like some still screen that is like a skeleton or something, or like a big eyeball monster or something like that. I would say it's backed with very somber kind of music.
Yeah.
So would you guys kind of describe it as like an adventure game? There's so actual little gameplay here. Yeah. It's almost like it reminded me at times of like a visual novel in the sense that, it's very focused on the story and there's very little actual gameplay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like a what is it? Like a word game. One of those old text games that you used to play on DOS. It was just like walk around, talk to everybody, do that every day.
Yeah, it's somewhere like a walking simulator or something almost.
Yeah, because it you're really just kind of like, you don't need to be a game developer to understand that there's a couple of key moments or actions in the game that then progress the entire game. Like, you'll just keep going until you do like action X, and after action X, door Y opens.
And that's, it gives you a hint about where you need to go next. And it's just
exactly.
Step by step by step by step.
And you don't have to like level up. You know, it's not like you're like, grinding to kill enemies to get to something. There's no enemies really in the game per se.
It's almost like a choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
Book, really.
I think so.
And it's whichever adventure you choose gets you the ending. You know, you can, because there was a point in the game where I saw, oh, I could, and the game could be over right now, I think. Or I could do this and it might take a little longer. I wonder if that's a different ending. I wonder if that's a better ending.
Yeah.
And so that's why I had to play it multiple times to get the multiple endings, and then other times I was playing it and an ending came out of nowhere. I was like, oh shit. Okay. I guess that's one of the endings.
Yeah. And I think
that was kind of cool.
Nick, what you were saying about like, it's impossible to talk about this game without talking about the endings, just like a choose your own adventure book. Like the whole point is that there's multiple endings and there's lots of things you can do to get to those endings. And that's right. Kind of the fun. Like, whereas it's not, it's almost like the endings are, well, I'll get into it later, but like the endings are more so than any regular game. I would say the most significant parts of the game, right? Like it's the most informative to the story. And it's also really what you're there to achieve is like to see all of those endings.
I could say that the game reminds me of walking around in one town in Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past.
Yeah.
It's fairly small. It's fairly compact, but it's just, it's top down, you know, and you scroll and walk from screen to screen to screen, talking to people and solving puzzles. It's more like, you know, you're talking to them and getting hints and clues about where to go next. Which leads you to the next step in the puzzle, the next, and eventually it leads you to one of the endings.
It's a very simple, cute little town. It seems like a nice place to live, you know, except for the, like, quasi-satanic cult.
Right.
Sure.
Under the church.
Isn't that every town, though?
Wait, spoiler.
All I said was that we wouldn't spoil the ending. Okay, that was it. One of the 11 endings. The game has 11 endings.
Okay.
That's in the marketing material.
Yes.
So that is not a spoiler.
That's not a spoiler.
So yeah, there is a quasi satanic cult underneath the church.
But I don't think it's too much of a spoiler, but yeah.
You find out pretty early. Look, it's a short game, okay? That's the other thing. It's a very short game. It took me, the first time I played it, maybe an hour to play through.
Yeah.
What did you guys, maybe an hour?
Oh yeah, like maybe. Well, I mean, the very first ending I got was a very quick an easy ending to get, and so I think I got it in maybe 30-35 minutes.
Okay.
But I just want to like answer that question of like, if this was somebody who had never played a game before and I was explaining this to them, I would say, imagine a short story about a person waking up in a village where there is a cult, and instead of reading the story, you're that person and you talk to everybody in the village, and depending on who you talk to and how you work with them, you get different endings of the story. That's it for me.
To choose your own adventure short story.
Yeah, it's not really a video game in that there's no levels, there's no progression of your character strength or stats.
There are very few even game mechanics.
Yeah.
Like you kind of, there's a couple of fetch quests.
Right.
And there's one ending that I think involves a little bit of strategy, more like traditional game mechanics, I think, than any other, but that's, it's the kind of the exception. Like most of the game is just walking around and talking to people. It's a short game. It really relies on this juxtaposition between the general cuteness of the aesthetic with the extremely somber music, the gruesome interstitials, and the just overall like sense of impending existential dread, I would say.
Yeah. Yep.
So yeah, the whole plot of the game is you are a boy, age 15. Your dad is gone. He is apparently dead. It's just you and your mom, and you live in this quaint little town with, you know, there's like maybe, I want to say, 36 other people in the town. Would you say that's a rough estimate?
Yeah.
Yeah. roughly 36 other people in town. And you are, you know, there's like a school, and there's a church, and there's a little, there's like a graveyard, and there's a little coffee shop, and there's this cool mountain with a great view, and there's a guy who lives in the beach and he just surfs all the time. And it's, you know, they're little, fun little small town characters. Right. Yeah. And it's, you just walk around and you just talk and you just suck up the atmosphere in this little small town. Right.
Yeah. And no matter how you walk around and no matter what direction you go in the town, there's an existential sense of dread that follows you around.
Right. Because you have been having these horrible dreams.
Right.
And in your dreams, this grotesque eyeball monster, this like chthonic god, tells you that in 3 days' time, Dedeus, who is the actual god of this world, will be coming back to reclaim his debt of flesh, you know, as you do.
As you are wont to do, as being a god of that ilk.
Right. And after that, everyone will be gone and dead. And so, yeah. So the entire plot of the game is wandering around and, you know, I would say it's not so much deciding whether or not to stop this from happening or how to stop it from happening, but is it real? Like, is this even actually happening?
Yeah.
I really enjoyed my first time through the game because to me, That's where the horror came from. Is this game scary? Do you guys think this game is scary?
I think it's a horror game. I think it's a game that makes me feel tension and horror at what's going to happen.
Yes, there is. It is a dark game, or it can go very dark. And as a, since you had mentioned that it was a horror game, and I was having the same feelings as you, like, is this thing that's supposedly happening even real? There's a certain ending that we can't talk about right now, but it's probably the darkest ending in the game. I went for that one first because I was like, if this is real, let's see how dark and how deep this thing goes. And that's the ending that I went for first. And whew, boy, is it ever dark.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, like, the game was most effective when you're walking around the town. Okay. It becomes really obvious that there are multiple possible realities at play here. You know, one reality is none of this is real. Okay. And everybody is just having some kind of like mass hallucination, like swamp gas or something. You know, it's making everybody have these weird nightmares. And another possibility is that you do stumble into, there is a cult. Very early on, you find out there's a cult of Deadeus, and they are trying to stop this from happening. This happens like every 15 years. There is a way to stop it from happening. The thing is, you don't know what the correct way is. And you get multiple options, multiple ways of stopping this from happening. And some of them are extremely brutal. Some of them involve a lot of murder, you know, and stuff that you may not want to do. So you have to make these moral choices. What got me, the horror of it all, is you don't know which of these is the right course of action. There's one way through the game that is relatively like low violence. You don't really have to do a lot of gruesome stuff. But there are other ways where you kind of like have to increase the violence, and you don't know, like, should I be doing this? Is this the right thing to do? I don't know. Mm-hmm. And to me, the horror came from that sense of not knowing.
I would say it would be more horrific or horror for me if you only got one shot at playing the game.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like, if the ending you got was the ending you got and you couldn't go back and try again, like if it was a one-shot deal, then it would
be real life.
Yeah, like real life. And then it would be very nerve-wracking trying to figure out what to do to get the quote-unquote right ending. But they're all the right ending. It just depends on how you play it, really.
And that's where the existential horror worked for me.
Yeah.
Because, just compare this to, it made me think a lot about, like, cults, right? Or conspiracy theories. Like, look at the world we're living in now. You know, we have all this shit on the internet with QAnon and whatever and conspiracies around vaccines and stuff. You know, people are faced with shit like this all the time. Like, you don't know what's real anymore. There's just so much information out there. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's, you know, when we were growing up, I mean, like, I remember when I was a kid, like, you know, the crazy conspiracy theory was like, was JFK shot by, you know, the CIA or the mafia or the Russians or something? Like, that's a pretty like down to earth conspiracy theory relative to the kind of shit that we see out there right now. Right.
True. True.
So, I mean, like, QAnon is a thing where, like, you go from like, oh yeah, the Russian mafia killed JFK to, yeah, Hillary Clinton runs a baby trading ring where she fucks kids and eats them, you know? I mean, like, it's just, it's fucking crazy. It's insane.
I'm laughing, like, just because it's imagine? Like, when you say it like that, it's like, yeah, that is actually, some people believe that. Yeah.
Yeah. Some people actually believe that. Like they, that is literally what they fucking believe. Like, can you imagine growing up in a town where, like, everybody believes shit like that and you don't know what's real, you know? And as far as, you know,
that's kind of the story.
Hillary Clinton, I mean, fucks and eats babies. I mean, you know.
In the game of Deadeus, you literally are growing up in a town where there is a conspiracy.
Right. And it's kind of like growing up in a cult.
Right. And you don't know in the game what the conspiracy is. Like you're saying, like, there's different endings which effectively determine what that conspiracy is. You basically discover that the conspiracy is something very personal, or it's something very, you know, broad and universe shattering, or, you know, all these kinds of things. But that's a really interesting way of determining it, because it does mean that there's no true ending. And I think that's a choice that the developer had to say, like, oh yeah, there's like a million different endings, but we all know that the real ending is ending number 3 or something like that. But to the best of my knowledge, it doesn't seem like that's been communicated. It doesn't seem like the developer has like blessed a particular ending.
Okay, so that is where I'm going to disagree, because that's where I most enjoyed the game. So when I played the game, I played through, I got like five or six endings, and I really enjoyed the game. And if I would have just put it down and walked away at that point, I probably would have called it like the best Game Boy game I've ever played. When I came back for this podcast, I decided to play through all the endings, and I do want to talk about them in detail here in a minute, but I just want to say there is, I believe, a canon ending.
Okay.
That's after reading an interview with Yzma and learning more about this like Dead AS world, and he had planned a sequel, like a Dead AS 2. So if there's a Dead AS 2, then that means there's got to be a canon ending.
Fair.
And after playing through all the endings, I think the game really heavily points towards one ending as being the canon ending. But once I realized that, and maybe I'm wrong, but once I realized that, I actually thought the game was a lot less effective.
Interesting.
Like, I wish that it would have been more open-ended, but I don't think it is. I do think that there's a canon ending.
You think the canon ending is leaving town, right?
Yeah, that's what it is.
Just leave it.
That's the canon ending.
The only thing I just want to add to this in terms of like what it reminds us of, or whether it's a horror game or what kind of genre it is, when I was playing this game and I was in the middle of all the different endings that I was trying out, what it reminded me most of was a show from the UK in the 70s called Children of the Stones.
Oh, is this that creepy fucking doll show?
No, I love creepy British TV shows, but this is not the creepy doll one. This is
a different creepy British TV show.
This is a different creepy. So the one that's the creepy doll one is called A Doll's House, A Totty.
Okay.
And that is creepy as fuck. But the one that I'm thinking of was literally called The Scariest Program Ever Made for Children. And it's nice.
It's a little on the nose, but I like it.
It's honestly like, I mean, it was made in the 70s for kids, like kids age 10 to 14. But it's really a mini series. It's 7 episodes long. Each episode's about 40 minutes. And it's a story about a father and a son who come to a small rural village in the UK. And they discover that there is a conspiracy, basically perpetuated by this guy who lives in a castle in the town. And it's not just a conspiracy, but it's actually a time loop. And they've gotten caught in this time loop, and it's been going on since Stonehenge was built. That doesn't really give away the story. The story is still amazing. You should definitely watch the show. But that's the vibe that I got from Dead AS, that there's this character who's caught in this loop. And the thing that I felt about the story, regardless of what ending you choose, there's this meta-narrative or overarching narrative of trying to escape a path that you're being forced down. If the endings were all wildly different or didn't seem to align or have any overlap, they wouldn't really have the same resonance to me. But the fact that they kind of all build on each other and make a greater story of like all of this edifice, this existential dread that you're trying to escape, that's the thing that I really loved about that story. You know, that's the thing that sticks with me, that it reminds me of this stuck in a loop fear that you just can't escape from, no matter what ending you choose.
Yes. It's like you're going down this rabbit hole. How deep do you want to go? And that depends on what ending you get. I completely agree with you in that it's the endings feel related, and it's literally which ending you get is almost how much do you want to buy in?
Yeah.
To the conspiracy. How far do you want to go with it? And that's it. And I loved that aspect of it.
Bart, you're the horror fan among all of us.
Yeah.
You have, how many Stephen King novels do you own? Like all of them?
All of them.
Literally all of them. See, I thought about Stephen King a lot when I was playing this game, because I am not a huge fan of horror. I would say it's probably my least favorite genre. Like survival horror games are like my least favorite kind of horror, like my least favorite kind of game. Mm-hmm. This reminded me a lot of Stephen King because of the effort it puts into atmosphere. To me, like Stephen King is all about atmosphere. I think about because I read Stephen King up until like the early 90s. I'm thinking of stuff like the archetypal Stephen King book is like Pet Sematary. Right?
Oh, sure, sure.
Because it is like laying on massive amounts of atmosphere without a whole lot of action. Mm-hmm. And it's not really until the last 30 pages or so of a book like that where stuff actually happens, like where you see a monster or the really creepy stuff happens, you know, or like somebody gets killed or something. But like up until then, it's all mostly just atmosphere. And that's kind of how I felt about this game. Like it's just this like huge buildup until it's literally divided into three acts, right? There's day one, there's day two, and then there's day three.
Yeah.
And day three, you know, is when everything just kind of goes off the fucking rails.
True.
The first day is like relatively normal. The second day, you're really starting to discover stuff deeper about the town. And then the third day is when you have to make decisions.
Well, if you really want to get one of the endings, you have to make it go off the rails in day two, I think.
Well, that's true. Right.
Yeah. The things that worked for me were actions that you took on day one affected day two actions and affected day three actions, which I thought were really cool. The other things that worked for me were the there's a point in the game where you go to the school and to the library, and like when you walk into certain classrooms, you're stuck in class and you have to like listen to the teacher lecture, which is fine because it's a good way to find out what you need to do next.
Right.
I just really liked that when you walk into the class, they're like, oh, hey, you're here. Cool. Sit down. We're going to have class now. And it's like, oh, shit, I can't leave this class until class is over. Like, you're kind of stuck in school, which was a very realistic thing. You know, that you don't see a lot in games. Usually you have a little more agency over what you can do. Like, I'm going to leave class. Well, you can't right now. You have to sit and listen to the teacher talk, and then you can leave. That worked for me.
Yeah. I think for me,
Connor, what do you think?
Yeah, the music worked really well because the soundtrack changes depending on even, you know, particular actions that you take in the game. For a Game Boy game, that's like wild. You know, like people who consider Game Boy game soundtracks to be very simplistic and very beep boop. And, you know, the flip side of me listening of playing on an emulator is that I listen to the headphones through my computer, and the soundtrack's awesome. The soundtrack is, I would say it's, I mean, the highest fidelity Game Boy soundtrack I've ever heard.
Yeah, I will say, I think the Game Boy gets a lot of flack for the audio from people who haven't spent a lot of time listening to Game Boy music. You're thinking of it through that shitty little speaker that the Game Boy had.
Yeah.
Actual Game Boy music is often, like, very good.
Yeah.
The Castlevania games on Game Boy have a phenomenal music.
And I never really understood that. And so that was, like, great to be surprised by that with Deadeus. So obviously it's not only Deadeus that has that quality, but it was certainly a very pleasant surprise to get that quality out of a game like Deadeus. I think there was a couple of things that did jump out for me for the music. One was a lot of the songs are in like a waltz time, like 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Mm-hmm. You know, it kind of gives you this kind of dancey feel, but it kind of like pushes things forward. My favorite song is probably the Schoolhouse song. Really spooky, but it kind of has this real strong emphasis on the first beat. Like you feel like it's a schoolhouse and like you're clearly there to learn, but like there's something, you know, insidious about it. When you save your game or when you acquire an item, it's a very Metroid-y kind of sound, which I got a very kind of Metroid vibe from some of the things. And then like the choices for like, so when you're in the church, there's this song called Together in Prayer, which has a really big church organ vibe. And it sounds like this song called I Heard the Voice of Jesus Say. And then the last two things were just the Surfer Bro Shop. It's like a real Surfaris inspired song with a kind of bluesy vibe, which I really liked. And then the song from the cafe called Bottoms Up, which has the biggest difference, I think, between the happy version and the sad version after everyone's dead. And I think that's probably the scariest song for me. Because when you go in and it's like totally discordant, completely messed up, and you know that just like you've gone too far. You know, like this is the end. There's no way back. We've talked a bit about how the gameplay is extremely simple, but that does not mean that a lot of effort hasn't been put into other areas of the game, like the narrative structure, like the music.
Oh, yeah.
Just like fit and polish of the visual style. It's just like a really nice visual style that is consistent throughout the whole game. In when you're playing, it looks the same, but also consistently surprising because it subverts that particular cutesy style in so many ways.
Right. Well, and I think when you have a game that has that little focus on gameplay, it really puts the focus on the story.
Totally.
Normally, with one of these retro games, I don't really care if the story has holes in it or it's just
right.
Kind of like we were saying with Lizard. Like, sometimes you just need that impetus to, like, get your ass out the door. Yeah. Hey, the princess has been kidnapped. Go save her. Like, how many NES games were like that? Or Game Boy games? But when you don't have any real gameplay to speak of, then it becomes all about the story. That's where I'm a little more critical. And I do think that this story has some holes in it that I found a little frustrating. Like I said, what worked about the game to me was that sense of unease at not knowing the correct way to go. You know, having all these like multiple options and some of them with like really difficult moral decisions that you have to make and not knowing which way to go. But as I played through the game and as it became more and more clear to me that there was like one right way to go through the game, a lot of that magic started to wear off. But I do just want to say, I do think that the art is very good. I think the music and the juxtaposition of the music with walking around in this cutesy little Pokemon town is very effective. And I think that there are some genuinely creepy scenes in the game. The moment in the game when I was most creeped out was when you are under the church and you pick up the knife for the first time and then you speak to somebody. You get a prompt, which is like, use the knife.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, yes. Or it's like, no, absolutely not. Like, no, I don't want to use the knife. That is, to me, like ramping up that sense of a confusion and unease. And it's like, okay, now you can make this moral choice. Like, now you can actually start murdering people for this conspiracy that you may not even know if it's real.
Right, right.
And every single interaction that you have with someone after that point, it asks you if you want to use the knife to kill them.
And it's not even just kill them. It's like their skin is left over. It's like you skinned them, which is even
worse. You literally you literally skin the corpse. Right. It's like this character is kind of slipping, like his sanity is slipping.
Yeah.
You know, and every time that you get that prompt, it's like, it doesn't matter who you're talking to. You can be talking to an old lady. You can be talking to a surfer dude. You can be talking to your own mom. And it's like, should I kill her? Should I use a knife? You know, that to me was like a more effective conveyance of this person's slipping mental state than like almost any other, like some survival horror crap that I've ever played,
sure.
You know, where your character goes crazy, right?
To piggyback on what you just said before we move along is you're talking about, you get that option to use the knife and it all seems, you know, like you said, every single person you talk to after that, they give you that option. The first time I was playing through it, I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to use the knife. And then it gets to a point where you're like, okay, cool, I'll use a knife. And then when you use the knife, you're left with their skin. And just like Nick said, you can, after you talk to your mom and ask you if you want to use the knife, the one that got me the most was, because when you first start the game and you talk to your mom and you're like, oh, the girl next door wants to see you. I think she really likes you. You should bring her some flowers. So that's what I did, is I tried to collect every flower and bring it to her, like to see if that, maybe that was one of the endings, like you're going to fall in love or whatever. But then like you get to a point in the game where you talk to her again and it's like, do you want to use the knife? And that was the hardest decision I had to make in the entire game, is like, oh my God. And I'll be real honest with you, she was the last one I used the knife on.
Oh. Yeah, I think it has effective moments.
It really does.
Like, the first time you pick up the knife, the first time you find the secret room at the church.
Yep.
You know, when you walk into the door and you find the secret room and there's the upside down cross.
Yeah.
I thought that was really effective.
Yes.
One thing that got me was when you go to the coffee shop on day three and everybody is like this totally blissful little coffee shop on days one and two. It's at the top of the mountain. You know, you got to think, man, this would be a cool place to hang out. There's a little coffee shop on top of a mountain with a great view. And you walk in on day three and there's just like bodily fluids everywhere. Yeah. And then I would say that another moment that was really effective for me was, did you guys go into the church on day three, like through the front doors?
I don't know if I did.
I think I did.
Oh man. Like there's this, I think it's like one of the coolest scenes in the entire game. You enter the church on day three, you go through the front doors and there are cultists everywhere. You can't leave. Like they're blocking the exit.
Whoa.
And the altar has been replaced with this gigantic horned skull that's been turned upside down.
Whoa.
And there's this huge pit in the middle of the floor and like all the music cuts out and you just get like this incredible like scene and then you leave again. And then when you walk back into the church, it's just a normal church again.
Huh, that's really cool.
Before we get to the endings, I do think the lack of game mechanics, like the game is about getting the different endings, right? Like that is the main mechanic. The goal is to get all the different endings. Like if you're not playing the game to get all the different endings, like you're kind of missing the point of the game.
I would kind of disagree on that because it's like...
Really?
I don't even think it's enough of a game to make you want to get all the endings. It's literally just here's a story.
You know, like if you're like me and you play through five or six and you put it down and you say, okay, I'm done. Like I was done with the game. You know, I got five or six endings and I'm like, I got enough endings. I think I'm done with it. Yeah. I would have had a much better feeling about the game. But when I came back and played it again, one of the things I didn't, when I picked this up again for this podcast, I did not want to play through the game again because I didn't want to have to start over again at day one.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to go through, you have to talk to all the people, you have to get all the stuff, you know, and yes, there are save points in the game. You can save the game and start over again, but it's not, if you want to get all the endings, you are going to have to go through the game over and over again. I'm just thinking like little things, like when you pick up the flowers. Okay, you want to give the flowers to the girl. You got 10 flowers in your inventory. You have to give her every single one, one at a time. It takes like 3 minutes to give her every single flower. Like little things like that make it, I feel like there's not a lot of replayability for the game, even though it's super short.
Okay, well, the next thing that I want to say has to come with a spoiler tag.
Okay. I tell you what. Let's do it. Okay, so I've kind of said everything that I need to without talking about the ending. So let's get to it. Okay, so folks, if you're listening at this point and you have not played through the game and you still think you want to play through the game, I don't know what you're doing. You need to stop because this game takes like an hour to get through. So go play through it and come back. We're going to talk about the endings now, and we're just going to spoil the shit out of this game. So, yeah. Skip ahead of the music. Here we go. Bart, let it rip.
Okay, so I forgot everything I was going to say. What were you saying right before that, for real? You were talking about the endings of the game. Okay, so with the endings of this game, I like the fact that there were so many different endings. And yes, I would not have played through and gotten all of those endings. But one of the things that I liked about it was after you had played it, and then after I had played it, we had like this little discussion. You were like, oh, did you get the ending where whatever happened? You know what I mean? And I was like, oh, but I got this ending. And like, I could see as a younger kid, if I had played this game, my friends and I would have been like, well, did you get the ending where you ended up in jail? Oh, no, I didn't get that one. That was really cool. Like my favorite ending, which I had alluded to earlier, there's an ending where if you kill someone in front of someone else, they'll call the cops and you go to jail. There's also a guy, a prisoner that is in jail that you talked to earlier in the game. You can kill him first, and then if you get sent to prison, you just rot in jail. But if you don't kill him first and you get sent to prison, he like walks up behind you and whispers in your ear, "Welcome to hell." And that's the end of the game. As a 15-year-old boy getting sent to prison, like that ending is that you're going to be prison raped. That is the darkest fucking ending ever. And I loved it. I mean, I just thought I was like, kudos for this guy to going so dark. I feel like this game, Dead AS, is the game that my mom would have been worried about me playing back in the day. Like, you know, it's like every single game that comes out, it's like all this satanic panic and all this stuff. It's like, oh, this game is going to rot these kids' minds. And it's like, this is the game that she was afraid of. You're a kid going around skinning people with a knife. And you have to try to kill everybody in the entire town. Like,
yeah, okay. So let's talk about the different branches you can take with the ending here. So you can just walk out of town. That's an ending. You can go to bed on the last day and, you know, you just sleep really well, apparently.
I actually did not do that ending.
You didn't do that one. No. Okay. The ending is it says that you had like the best sleep you've had in days.
Okay.
You know? One ending I like, one of my favorite endings, is you kill your mom and you get the key to the doorway on the mountain.
Yes.
And then you get to meet your dad.
That's my favorite ending. You know, that's my favorite ending.
See, that's what fucks me up about this. That's why that was one of the first endings I got. And that's where I started to get like really freaked out because, see, here's the thing. Your dad is in there and they've chained him up. He's had this thing carved into his forehead. Apparently, nobody's doing that now. And so everybody's doing all this stuff to prevent Dead AS from wiping the universe clean or whatever. And somebody killed your dad. I guess your mom killed your dad or something to stop this from happening. But nobody's doing that right now. So like that probably it didn't do anything, right? Your dad's been sacrificed.
You don't know.
You don't even know if it was worth anything.
But that's why I like the ending. The exact thing that you just said.
I'm not saying it's a bad ending. That's a good ending.
Okay,
I like that.
I'm just like,
it's effective.
To be clear, like that, it's the ambiguity that I like a lot, and it's also
And so I want to talk about that because I do think that things get less ambiguous as you get through the endings.
Sure.
You can go sit on the bench and you can just watch the world end. You can do it by yourself.
The sun's cracking.
Yes, The Sun's Crack. You can watch it by yourself, or you can watch with the girl next door. You can jump in the water and die. Did you guys try that one?
I did that one.
Yep.
So that's kind of a meme ending. Like I did not realize until I did that one. Like I've seen that end slate before, where it just goes, "You died." Like that to me is the funniest ending, because there's like nothing to it. It's just like, oh, you died. All right, credits roll. Nothing. Right. Like it doesn't even elaborate. It's just like, what the fuck did you think was going to happen? So stupid.
You do have to try pretty hard to do that ending, because like you have to wait for the whatever, like the lifeguard to not be there.
You can kill the lifeguard.
Oh yeah, jump. That was it.
Yeah,
and then jump.
Or is he just fishing? Wasn't there a guy on the dock?
I don't know. Like, he's not a lifeguard. He's like a fisherman or something.
Because he keeps telling you about how you could fall off and die every day.
Yeah. Okay. So those are like the easy endings. Okay. Then there's like the more difficult endings, and these, I think there are a few paths you can go here. So you can do the one where you kill everybody, right? And that's the one that we were alluding to earlier. I think that's the one where it feels like a video game, like at that point, because there's some strategy to this. You can lock yourself out of this ending if you don't start it on day two, because you have to kill people when they're by themselves. Because if you kill them when there's another person in the room, you will get the cops called on you. So you have to be really careful when you like stalk people and murder them, right? And so this one, you go through and you kill 36 people, and you're like, wait a minute, where's the 37th person? And there's nobody else. It's just you. You're in town. You killed all these people, and it was for nothing, right? I don't know, man. Like, to put the ending that involves the most effort, and you've got this, like...
So dark.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I was expecting more out of that
ending. Well, isn't it supposed to be the fact you have to kill yourself to make it work?
Well, yeah, but how are you going to skin yourself?
Yeah, you can't. That's the thing.
Right. Well, and it's just, the whole thing is like, okay, I did this to save the town, but I've killed everybody in the town. So what am I saving? You know?
Right.
Yeah. So that's an interesting ending. I will say, like, my suspension of disbelief for this game, like, I can believe there is some god, like, doing all this crap, but it's funny how you get hung up on, like, certain things. Because, like, for me, it was like, okay, how the fuck is this kid murdering people and skinning the corpses in the matter of like seconds? Like, how would you kill and skin 36 people in a day and a half?
It's a magic knife.
You're a 15-year-old boy who's never skinned a human corpse before. Like, how long do you think it would take you to skin a human corpse?
But that's the thing. You're special. The story is about you.
I don't know. How many turtles do you think Mario jumps on daily before he went to save the princess?
I'm just saying, like, you know, you've got, okay, it's like, I'm going to skin 36 people, and it's just going to take me a day and a half. La-di-da, I'm walking through the town. Yeah. Oh, where's the 37? I don't know.
I think,
and you're just walking around. What do you do? Like, I mean, I don't know how much space, like, 36 human skins take up. What, do you have them in a backpack?
This is, for me, I think this is a big difference between why I like the game from other people liking the game. Like, something like that, my mind is, like, wired to think that that's part of the story.
Okay.
Like, that this person is skinning people, and like, he's just some random dude, and he has this like ability to skin people. Because like you're saying, he doesn't just stab people with a knife. He skins.
No, he fucking skins the corpse.
Yeah. Right?
And that's
I
like,
just assumed it was a magic knife.
That's the only option available to him. There's nothing else he can do with the knife. The knife, he can't cut butter with it. Like, you know, he's like, the only thing he can do is skin people. To me,
well,
like,
he did
brain,
steal it from a satanic temple. I mean, what are you going to do with a knife you steal from a satanic temple?
Exactly. So in my head, when he goes up to use the knife, he stabs the knife in someone and everything but their skin goes poof, and it just falls to the ground. And there's a skin that he picks up and puts in his duffel bag to be used TBD, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's like, and in other horror, you know, movies or books or whatever, it's like, there's a certain amount of like the player or the viewer or the reader has to actively make a choice about the morality of the main character, right? Like in most of
good
horror movies. So in this particular case, he's going around skinning people, right? But then you're kind of, because of all the different endings, you're kind of like, does he have a choice? Is this something that he has to do? Do you, like,
right,
because
exactly,
when you're
right.
doing it, like, the way you're talking about this, right? The literal way you're talking about this. Well, you know, I wanted to do, like, a video game, and I always wanted to, like, get all the skins. Like, you're talking about it like you're compelled to get every skin. You're literally talking about it as if you, like, there is a force pushing you to get every skin in the game. And that's
once
like...
Once you go down that road, once you start down that road, you feel like you have to complete it, or else why skin four people when you need to do it all?
That, like, my mind is wired to say that that is, like, the developer or the game designer is, like, using that against you.
That's another reason it's like Pokemon. You got to collect them all.
Yes, but but here's the thing. All of that is undermined if there's a canon ending.
Fair enough. Okay.
That's my argument. Okay. And I want to get to this. I'm working up to this because this is my central criticism of this game. There are two other courses. Okay. So we just talked about killing everybody. There's the course where you kill 10 people and you leave flowers on the corpses. Did you guys do that?
I did not. I gave all the flowers to the girl.
Okay.
Did you guys
didn't do the ending where you kill 10 people?
I did not do the
10
people.
I did kill people, but I didn't put flowers on their
corpses. That was my favorite ending. So, no, you kill 10 people and you put flowers on the corpses. That is the offering to Dedeus. That, I can't remember who suggests you do that. I think it's maybe some guy in the temple. He's like, this is the real ceremony. You have to kill 10 people and put flowers on the corpses. Mm-hmm. You go to bed and you meet Dedeus. You are transported to a void. And you go in there and there's like a circle of 10 flowers and Dedeus is standing in the middle. And he's like, what the fuck? Why did you kill all these people? You did that just for me? Like, but all this violence just for me. Why did you do that? Okay, well, clearly
you did that ending. Yes.
Yeah, clearly you like your life, so I'm just going to let you keep it. But man, I'm just really tired of being a god, so I'm going to wipe away the world anyway, but you can keep your life and I'll be back in 15 years. And he leaves you and you're just walking around. You're still in the void. You're completely by yourself. You're like totally naked. You're not even wearing clothes. And you're like, oh my God, everything is gone. Everything is gone. Like, that's an effective ending. Like, I was like, okay, that's cool. I like that.
Is that
that's
the canon ending?
Yeah, no, that is not the canon ending.
I refuse to believe that there's a canon ending in this.
I think,
okay,
yeah.
The canon ending, did you guys do the endings where you get the ceremonies and throw yourself in the hole?
Yes.
Where you, like, put all the shit on the corners of the pentagram?
Yes. Canon ending is, I believe, you get all the stuff. You get the dead cat. You get the asteroid and the flower and the what's the other one, the blank book, okay, and the full heart and this took me a little while to figure out how to do this ending, because when so you give all the flowers to the girl, right? Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, my heart is full, and immediately I'm like, yes.
Right,
stabby time. So I kill her, right? And but all you do is skin her corpse and that's it. It doesn't give you, like, you know, it's not like you can, like, check her inventory or something, and oh, there's the heart.
Right.
Like, it, like, you can't take it. You have to wait until she's, like, on top of the mountain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Am I right?
I forget which way.
Yeah, I think you have to wait until she's on top of the mountain. So anyway, yeah, so I finally figured that one out. This ending, right, where you meet Dedeus and, like, you become Dedeus, mm-hmm. Okay? Well, there's two variations on this. Either you can jump into the hole, or did you guys try the one where you push the other guy into the hole?
I think I did the push.
Maybe. See, this is starting to sound more and more like there's more than 11 endings.
Well, okay, so there's 11, and then there's a few with variations.
Right.
Okay, so the ending that I think is the canon ending is the one where you jump into the fucking hole.
Mm-hmm.
Because in that one, you, like, meet Dedeus, and you become Dedeus. And when you jump into the hole, if you have not yet killed your mom runs in, and she's like, did he do it? You know, he's like, yes, you've done well. We'll see you again in 15 years. So, you know, and there's that, and there's the whole dream about, like, you know, this is the one Dedeus wants. It's in his blood or something like mm-hmm. that. So here's the thing that I don't get, okay? You go in this thing, and you meet Dedeus, and you know, Dedeus is like, okay, I will let you guys live for another 15 years. But, like, you know, the mom runs into the room and all this stuff, and it's like, well, wait a minute. Hold the fuck on. If everybody in this cult knew that you were supposed to be the sacrifice, right? And you were supposed to go do all this stuff and jump into the hole and all this crap. And, like, that is the ending that solves the problem. That makes Dedeus go away for the next 15 years, like you're supposed to do. Why didn't somebody just fucking tell you that in the beginning? Why didn't just somebody, you know, if everybody knew for 15 years that you were going to be the sacrifice, why did they just leave it up to you to wander around town and just kind of, like, you know, wander into this ending by yourself?
He's going to be the sacrifice, but he has to do it of his own free will, or else it
won't work.
Yeah, but,
like, you know, they're not even like guiding him into this, like, you know, if you thought that the fate of the world was in the balance, would you just kind of like leave it up to the solution to find itself?
No, you'd probably, you know, take your husband and lock him in a cave and it wouldn't work.
Yeah, like she murdered the kid's dad for that. Like, why wouldn't they like more forcefully push the kid into getting the stuff together?
I don't know.
You know? Why does the kid have to put the shit on the altars himself? You know, it's not like the stuff is that hard to find. It's like, okay, it's a fucking dead cat. It's a flower. It's a book. You know?
I mean, you
like
want a dead cat? I'll get you a dead cat by noon.
Yeah, it's like, is it that hard to find a dead cat? Like, you know, the cult could have put this shit together by itself, but they waited for you to do it. I don't, what, you know, what did that have to do with anything? And it's like, okay, here's the sacrifice. Just throw the kid in there. Like, why do you have to do it himself? If you push the guy, it still saves the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why, you know, why couldn't they just fucking throw you in the hole?
Interesting.
That's what I don't understand. It's just so full of plot holes. And I realize I sound like a nitpicky motherfucker when I say all this stuff, but here's the thing is, you know, as I said before, if you are going to make the game all about the story, if you are going to have so little gameplay and put the focus on the story, then, you know, that I think that opens up the story to this level of scrutiny. You know okay. what I'm saying?
I also feel like there's no canon ending unless there's a sequel. Because if there's a sequel, then you have to establish a canon ending in order to
okay.
set up the story for the sequel. So I feel like if there is to be determined an actual canon ending, or if there is, if he makes a sequel, then, you know, he can let us know which one it is. But until then, I feel like they're all kind of canon. Although
that's fair. Okay.
The one that you mentioned does, it's the most video game ending. Like, it's, you know, five different fetch quests and assemble right. all of your pieces together to make the last scene happen. That does feel like the most video game ending of the game. Honestly.
Well, and see, I went back and I played the endings that are very vague, like the one like where you leave town.
Right.
And the first time I got it, I thought it was pretty effective because it's vague. Like, it doesn't really suggest that anything happens. When I played it again, after I kind of got this canon ending, what I thought was a canon ending.
Yeah.
You know, the screen shakes and, you know, you have this ominous music and it does kind of seem like you fucked everything up when you do that. You know, right. like it would have been a lot more effective to me if when you go to bed on the third day, it shows you waking up on day four and everything's like, oh, I guess none of that was real, you know, or like mm-hmm. if you left town and it just showed you walking through other towns and maybe you like you go live your life somewhere else and nothing happens. Then I would believe it. Like, there's, you know, then maybe there is no canon ending. And, you know, maybe all this stuff is, you know, none of this is real. Like, that to me is a lot more effective. But I think that when you get the canon ending and it's so full of those plot holes, I don't know, man. I found it really frustrating and disappointing.
Well, yeah, fair enough. I did not. I enjoyed the hell out of this game. I enjoyed the multiple endings from killing of everybody, or killing the girl next door, killing your parents, getting prison raped. That's right. How very Shawshank.
The Shawshank ending.
Yeah. I don't want to nitpick a game to death, but I honestly didn't have too many nitpicks because I didn't feel like it was a canon ending, I guess. It just felt like, okay, it was another one of those endings. Okay, well, you know what? That one was okay. Let's find a better one. You know?
All right. Well, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I really hope there's not a canon ending because I think the game would be a lot more effective without right. it. Connor, what did you think?
The point of the Homebrew Game Club.
That's what it is. No, I think I'm kind of more on Bart's side, but I agree that like if there is a canon ending, it does remove a lot of all of the stuff that I'm assuming because I'm making a lot of assumptions, like things that you're mentioning about like when you leave the village, right? Like, there's nothing after you leave the village. It's just like you're walking through white space.
And then the screen shakes and...
Right. Yeah. Well, depending on which day you leave, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really? It's different depending on the day you leave?
Yeah, yeah. Like, if you leave the town on day two, right? It's a really happy song in the credits. The credits have a different soundtrack depending on which ending you choose.
Okay.
And I took that to mean some part of, like, you've decided to have a happy ending. Like, because right. when you leave the town on day two.
Yeah, in my notes, I was actually writing down what type of music played depending on the ending. And because yes. I thought that was interesting. That's why I actually thought in the beginning, like, there probably wasn't a canon ending, because, like, some of them are, they do sound kind of happy. Right. Probably the happiest ending in the game, I think, is where you just go to bed on day three.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, he slept great. You know, the music is very peaceful, and that's it. It's all over.
Right. So, like, yeah, in the leaving town on day two, it's, like, just this happy major key, like, boop, 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 like, pretty happy ending, compared to some tunes, which, like, if you go to certain places, there's, like, these basically these remixes of the tune that you've heard before, except even more spooky. That's, like, in specific locations. But I think the ending part, just to your point, if there is a canon ending, then all of that's kind of undermined. So I don't know if the creator, like, implied there would be a sequel and then kind of thought, maybe I won't do that.
Wait a second. You said something a second ago that just kind of blew my mind, because I never got the ending where you go to sleep on the third day and then you just wake up and you had the best sleep of your life. So does that
no,
mean
no,
that...
No, you don't wake up.
Oh, you
it
don't does, wake up.
It is uncertain as to whether or not you wake up. It just says that you have a very... Like, you have the best sleep that you've had in days.
Okay. I would take that to mean that you woke up the next day and...
If you do, that's great, because it means...
It means nothing. There's no point to the game.
Right. Like, well, so I think that's great. I think that's great. Actually, that to me is the scariest ending, if there's no point to any of this shit.
Right. Well, so Hidetius wasn't actually coming back?
Right, right.
That's very interesting.
So I'm going to say it's because my brain is wired to assume that the developer made intentional choices around all of this.
Okay.
I will do backflips in my mind with the narrative to justify the way that it ends. So, like, for that exact ending, right, where it's like you had the best sleep of your life, maybe the cultists got their shit together while you were asleep. Like, you don't know
right. That
they don't do that. So I'm like, well, maybe that's what happened. Maybe if you reject, like, you completely go passive. You don't, like, leave the town. You don't stay and fight it. You just sleep. Like, maybe the world moves on without you. Maybe people go and do that. Like, I don't know. But, like, my mind is wired to say, like, whatever, like, makes it make sense, I'm going to, like, jump to that conclusion.
All these cultists are like, I don't know, guys, this kid's not doing his thing. Maybe we should work a little harder.
This kid's a lazy
ass. Well, and see, that's where I don't know. Like, maybe that's just the way that I, like, consume stories. But, like, to me, you know, like, so many of these stories, this is kind of why I don't like horror as a genre. Because a lot of the horror and the interest in the story comes from, you know, you think about, you're telling a story and it's all about, what do you reveal when? It's like, there's a great mystery to this game, and the game, or any story, like a movie or a book or anything, it's just going to feed you these little nuggets of information. The pacing of the story is all about, when are we going to give you that information? And to me, whether, like, horror especially benefits from this, because when you don't know what the big horror, what the big scary thing is, like, your imagination fills in those blanks with so many more effective things than somebody else could come up with. Effective horror, to me, plays on that feeling. And I feel like this game does, for the most part. But it kind of falls apart in Act 3, where it starts to reveal what is real and what isn't. And that's where I think, if that ending is canon, if that's real, it's not as interesting to me as if all this stuff was just up in the air.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's the major issue I take with almost every horror film that I've ever seen. I love horror so much because of the 4 or 5 horror movies that stick the landing. You always have this problem with horror in the third act where everything falls apart and it's just like, oh, fuck, that sucked. That was so stupid the way they ended that movie. Like the Blair Witch Project, for example. You either love that movie or you hate that movie. And I'm convinced that if you hate that movie, you didn't watch it properly, because that movie is so scary because it all happens in your head. Anything that happens in your head, like you said, is 10,000 times scarier than anything you'd ever see on the screen. You don't see anything on the screen. It all happens in your head. And that's why that movie is fucking terrifying. And I loved it. And apparently lots of other people loved it too, because it made a shitload of money. But it comes down to that third act problem, is if you don't stick the landing, I have a lot of problems with horror films. But it depends on which ending you get on this game as to whether or not you stick the landing. And I think that's up to you as the player.
Well, and yeah, I guess that I guess it just comes down to your interpretation. Because the more endings that I got, the less enchanted I was with the game.
I can agree with that, which is probably why I stopped.
Okay, well, that's probably why I said, right. Well, maybe that's a good, it would be a good idea. Maybe just you get a couple and you stop. But I still think it was fun. Yeah, up until that point, like it was, like I said, it might have been one of the best Game Boy games that I've ever played. Now I just think it was a good time.
Sure. And it still goes
back. That's fine. That's fine.
Yeah. Still goes back for me to, it's a choose your own adventure book. Whenever I was a kid, I would read those and it would take about 40 minutes to read through one good story. And if I liked it, I'd go back and I'd try to get a different one. And maybe I'd get a third or a fourth one, but I never read every single page in those choose your own adventure books because some of the endings are just stupid. And it just, I don't want to have to reread the first 30 pages every time just to get it. So,
well, and I also felt like I was just done with the book at a certain point. Yeah. You know, like I'd gotten every ending I wanted to out of it. And, you know, I mean, with those books, I would do kind of like what I did with this game. You know, I was really abusing my save states.
Sure.
You know, you just kind of stick your finger in that page of the book and you flip forward. And you're like, do I really want to bother with this one? Nah, you know, that's kind of a stupid course of it. Oh, I got an ending. Exactly. All right, just flip back. You know, nobody starts over those books from the very beginning.
Which is why I only played 5 or 6 endings and stopped. And then you were like, you know, there's like 11 or so endings. And I was like, ugh, okay. I don't know if I'm going to get them all.
What you just said, I mean, like that's when I got my 5 or 6 endings and I was done going back into the game, I really did not want to go back into it.
Yeah, me either. And
this is one where I'm glad I didn't get like a physical copy of this game because I would not want to play it again.
Sure.
I feel like once you've played it, you've put about an hour or two into it, you're probably done with it.
I'm on the opposite.
Yeah.
I'm feeling a little remorse about not buying the physical copy that I had that I saw back in
that's
like,
right.
November,
you talked
October.
About that. Now you are a guy, you don't have any like retro games, do you? I mean, no, I guess
I have
you got
game,
that one copy
the game
of E.T.
Boy. I've got the Game Boy and I have E.T. and that might be it because I got rid of everything. I used to have a massive, massive collection of NES games, SNES games, Nintendo 64. And it just, when I had kids and, you know, I got out of gaming for about 10 years, I just got rid of all of it. But just because of the artwork alone and the way that the cartridge looked and the way the artwork looked and like you could, it was a big special collector's edition that you could get that wasn't too crazily priced. I kind of regret not getting it because I wouldn't mind having a Dead Ace poster on my wall because I did enjoy the game. It was really cool. Maybe I'll look that up and see if I can find one.
Okay, I think we're done talking about the endings. I'm going to play my music here and then we can come back and kind of do our closing thoughts on the game.
Word.
We're back. Do you guys have any kind of final thoughts on this game before we kind of wrap it up?
Yeah, I think for me, it's like for the price that I paid for it, I got like an hour or two enjoyment out of it. And I think that's it. Like, I don't really see it as a game. I guess maybe that's part of it as well. Like, I'm seeing it more as like somebody had a horror story and instead of writing an SCP, they just made this game.
Yeah, it's like a visual story.
That's actually how I'm grading this. Like, that's the curve that I'm grading it against. I'm not grading this as like gameplay or like replayability. I'm grading it against like, is this the best form of a creepypasta that it could be? And I think the answer was yes. So like that's kind of, I haven't even really grading it as a game, I think, if I'm being honest. I'm not even thinking of it in terms of like competing for my attention with, say, a puzzle game or some kind of like action adventure. It's like I played this game instead of reading the SCP archive.
Yeah, and you know what?
Right,
I wish there were more of these. I honestly do.
I think there are. There's kind of a whole genre of Game Boy horror games. Like I think they use that juxtaposition, like I was talking about. They play off the cutesiness of the console.
Yeah.
There's Game Boy horror is like a thing now.
Yeah. So I would very much love to play more games like this that are basically let's play an hour long quote unquote game instead of reading the SCP. You know.
Yeah. I played a game jam demo of a Game Boy game that was like super, super short, but it was literally like you're a detective at a crime scene and you're basically your partner is like, oh, this is an open and shut case. And you're like, no, there's something to it. It's literally just like you're clicking on things on the screen saying like, look at this again. Like it's not a lot of gameplay, but it is effectively a short story that's kind of creepy that you can enjoy for being a creepypasta, basically.
That's pretty cool.
I wish I remember the name of it.
There was lots of things for me to enjoy about the game. I enjoyed playing a game that felt like I said earlier, it felt like I wasn't supposed to be playing it because it was so dark. You know, like I said, it was the game that the parents would have freaked out about if it had come out in 1990. You know, then it would have really been like, oh my God, the Game Boy is evil. It needs to go away. So I get that. And I really dug that. And it, you know, the whole reason I even wanted to play it in the first place was because you had mentioned that it felt like playing a Stephen King story. And, you know, it does have that little element to it and that weird undertones that kind of permeate the whole story really made it for me. It's just so many weird things that you can do.
Yeah. For me, like, horror is a strange genre since it actively seeks rejection from the audience. Like a good horror piece of art makes you as the audience like actively push against it and say this is evil or weird or wrong. And successful horror usually taps into universally despised themes like you know, Dracula or aliens, you know, fear of the unknown, fear of things that are just going out to get you. And it's very difficult to make a horror game that you want to come back to that draws you in while still encouraging the player to reject the circumstances they play in. Final thoughts, no jump scares, great game, A+.
You know, you say that about horror people, you want your audience to reject it. And whenever we made our horror short innards.
Oh, that's really good too. That's a good one.
We said if everybody that watches this game watches this movie leaves the theater in disgust, we've done our job. You know, we won a few awards with it. We went to a bunch of film festivals and people would come up to me afterwards and talk about how it was like the grossest movie they've ever seen and it was so bloody and disgusting and like literally there's one drop of blood in the entire film. It's one drop. So
I just want to clarify to people what you're talking about. So, Bart, you've actually made a horror short film.
Yes.
Called Innards. And is this available online?
We can throw the link to it up in the Discord.
Yeah, let's put it in the show notes or something.
Yeah.
Of all the stuff that you've done, like, I think that was the most effective. Like, it has this Cronenbergian body horror thing to it. And it's like there's some scenes in this that are legitimately disgusting. I love it.
Right. But when you actually watch it, it's not really
it's
disgusting.
Not bloody it's body horror without being like bloody, which was really like that's really impressive to pull that off.
It was all about the sound. If you watch it, make sure you get some good headphones and get it right up in there because it's all about the sound design. I worked pretty damn hard on that sound design to make it sound as disgusting as possible.
Nice.
All right, I tell you what, Dead AS, there we go. Okay, do we have anything else to talk about? We talked about the list.
Yeah, I missed that one.
Sorry.
Did that episode already.
I was out of town for that.
The list is back up, at least as of this recording.
Oh, really?
Well, no, it's not back up. I guess he said he's going to possibly put it back up.
Mm.
We're talking about the Seth Abramson Top 100 NES Homebrew Games list that Connor and I just did an episode about as we're recording. That was like 3 days ago.
Yeah. Sorry, I missed that one.
Yeah. I'm sorry you missed that, too. That was fun.
That was fun.
Guys, it's the beginning of a new year here. What did you play in 2021? What'd you like? What other games did you play?
I got hooked on Spider-Man for the PS5, PS4. I don't know. I just fell into it, and it was so good. And which also kind of got me really hyped to see the new Spider-Man movie that just came out. So the last half of my 2021 has been mostly Spider-Man.
Nice.
Yeah. 2021 for me was, I think, a lot of Streets of Rage 4. I suck at that game, but I love it so much. And they released an expansion for it, so there's just like more moves and combos.
It's very
and stuff
good.
Now. Yeah, it's actually a really good expansion.
It's like a whole additional game, kind of. Yeah, it really changes the core gameplay.
I played River City Girls, which is another kind of like run and smack people around game.
Right.
And I was really excited to play it. But after playing Streets of Rage 4, it's just like Streets of Rage 4 is so good. It's almost like a downgrade to do anything else in that genre. So I was a little disappointed with that, but still really cool graphic style, really cool art style.
I like the, it's got a cute story. A lot of things about River City Girls works for me. I don't think it's quite on the level of Streets of Rage 4.
Yeah.
But it's got those RPG mechanics, and you really kind of have to understand how those work, I think.
Yeah.
Because the game, like, in the beginning, it like the first maybe half of the game is kind of a slog. Because really what you're doing is grinding.
Yeah, I'll be honest. The first boss killed me like 10 times in a row, and I was like, not really sure I'm going to invest the time in this game.
Oh, I didn't think it was that bad.
Yeah, well, that's because I suck at these games, but yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things, I wish that game had all the moves unlocked from the beginning.
Yeah.
Kind of like Streets of Rage does. Like, you don't unlock moves in Streets of Rage. You just kind of start off with your whole arsenal.
Yeah. In the expansion, there's different versions of the moves that you can
select. Yeah, and you can earn them. Yeah. But no, in River City Girls, you have to grind. Like, you have to earn enough money to go to the dojo to buy the new moves. And it takes the first half of the game until you've got all the moves unlocked and you can really start to use them. And I wish the game had not been structured that way, because once you've unlocked all the moves, you really unlock the fun of the game. Because you don't feel constrained. And, you know, you have this power-up system, the RPG mechanics, where you constantly get faster and you constantly get stronger. And the game gets so much more fun once your character is really powered up. But, you know, I think you have to convince people to stick with the game until you get to that point. Because in the beginning of the game, you are very slow and your moves are very limited and it's not as much fun.
And those are probably the two games I played the most, I would say, because I did play some Fortnite, but it got awkward because I had to do it on Switch instead of the Mac and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, well, that's why
I also played Fortnite.
Because I was on the Mac. Yeah, Bart, did you play Fortnite?
Yeah, I did. Oh, and another game that I played was, it's on my phone. I discovered the joys of playing The Room 1 and 2. I don't know if you guys have ever played this game, but it's a puzzle game. The Room.
Oh, is this like Tommy Wiseau?
No. It's like a giant puzzle box that you have to try to solve. It's actually really cool. I highly recommend checking it out. I'm currently playing The Room 2. I beat the original Room about middle of the summer. It's one of those that I really enjoy, and I could probably sit down and play it for 10 hours straight and like completely beat the whole thing, but I'm just very slowly like doling it out to myself so I can make it last, because it is such a fun game to play. It's just a puzzle, a literal puzzle box. It's pretty cool.
I was kind of hoping it would be a Tommy Wiseau game.
Oh, hi, Nick.
Oh, hi, Bart.
Yep.
Yeah, what did I play? I played fucking Hades. That's what I played. I started playing Hades again, goddammit. I had to stop myself because I had to play games for this fucking podcast. I cannot stop playing Hades. I got to tell you guys, Hades might be the best designed game I have ever fucking played. Like, there is no fat in that game. I am over 130 hours into that game at this point.
Jesus.
And I honestly, like, there's not been a single thing that feels like it shouldn't be there. It's incredible. Like, I've never seen a game pull this off. And you got to understand, like, I have not put 100 hours into a game since I played Fallout New Vegas 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's just, I'm not that kind of person. Like, I play a game for a little bit. I sample games. You know, if a game takes me longer than like 20 hours, like, I'm not interested. I have other things to do. I have other video games to play. But this game, I cannot put it down. I am 130 hours into it. I'm going to put another 100 into it at least. I can't stop playing it. Every time I play it, I find out something new about the game every single time, and I am 130 hours into it.
It's super high on my list to play.
That's advanced.
I don't know that it's for everybody. It is a hard game.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is, they have this thing called God mode, and a lot of people don't want to do it because it's easy mode, right? But every time you die, your damage resistance goes up by 2%, and it goes all the way up to like 80%. And if you have 80% damage resistance, you're almost invincible. Like, I put my six-year-old, he wanted to play this game. So he started playing the practice room, and he did that for a few hours, just like beating up the practice dummy with the different weapons. And then he wanted to actually play the game. So I said, okay, but you have to put it on God mode, and you have to know you're going to die a lot. Like, that is the point of the game. You progress through the game by dying a lot. And he's like, okay, okay. And he's six, okay? I just want to reiterate that. He's 6 years old. He's halfway through the fucking game now.
Nice.
Like, he is fucking tearing it up. And he, yeah, he died enough to get his damage resistance up to 80%. But, man, he is, like, torching it through this game. I cannot believe it.
You know, way back in the day when I was first starting to play Fortnite, like 3 years ago, I gave the controller to my daughter, who was four at the time, and she played. Right. She got second place, and I hadn't even gotten second place at that time. And I was like, "What the fuck?" So I posted it on Reddit, and I had like this little video. I was like, "My daughter just played, and she hid in a bush, but she got second place. I'm so proud of her. It's the first time she ever played. She's only 4 years old. She's better than I am." The number one comment was, "You and your daughter are cowardly weaklings." I was like, "All right, that's the last time I'm posting on Reddit ever."
Nice.
That is rough. Man. That is very rough.
Super rough.
The other game that I played a lot of this year was a game called Fight and Rage. So, Connor, have you tried this one yet?
No.
It's a beat-em-up game, okay? So I've been playing a hell of a lot of beat-em-ups lately. But it is a beat-em-up game with fighting mechanics. So it has these combos that you can do like a fighting game. You know, like when you get really good at a fighting game, like you can basically just juggle your enemy across the screen as you like beat the shit out of them.
Right.
This game is like that. So you might have 20 enemies on the screen, but if you know the right button combos, like you can beat up everybody at the same time.
That's pretty rad.
And it takes a couple hours to learn the mechanics, but once you get good at the game, it is so empowering. And it is a really fucking hard game, don't get me wrong, but once you get good at it, it is so much fun. And it is honestly the most fun I've ever had playing a beat 'em up. I have more fun with this game than I do with Streets of Rage. I think Streets of Rage 4, it's like a work of art. It's a fucking masterpiece. I really do believe that.
Yeah.
Fight and Rage was literally made by one guy.
Wow.
There was one other guy who did the music, but they're both from Uruguay. You're talking about like as indie as it gets, okay? And the game is not perfect. The story is a little bit ridiculous. It has, I think, 54 endings, and like my I've been playing through this game with a mutual friend of ours. I think I'm up to like 18 endings by this point. And the joke that we have between each other is it's got 54 endings, but none of them are good. You know, so the dialogue's a little silly, the endings are a little silly, but I got to tell you, like the core gameplay is so much fun. It is just crazy fun. So that's the other game that I put like 50 hours into this year. I just could not stop playing that game. When I wasn't playing Hades, I was playing Fight and Rage. Between those two, I would have played a lot more Homebrew.
Yeah.
But those two just sucked up all of my free time because I didn't want to play anything else. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what Spider-Man was for me. When I got the PS5, I bought the Miles Morales. I found it on eBay, and it came with the original Spider-Man. I was like, oh, screw it, I'll play that first. And like I got into it, and it was just so beautiful and so fun to play. Just like you said, just beating the shit out of 20 people on the screen at the same time is just amazing. I totally get that. It sucked a lot of my time.
Okay, what do you guys, you have any New Year's resolutions or anything like that?
Typically, I say I'm going to play less video games, but not this year.
You better not.
I think I'm going to play more. I do want to get my hands on the new Horizon Zero Dawn sequel, so that's going to be pretty rad.
Connor, you got anything on the docket?
No, I think I'm just going to roll with it. Let's see what other lists get made that we can talk about and comment on. That's comment more. That's, I guess, my resolution.
Lists. Yeah, we need people to make lists so we can have one-off episodes about that.
Yes, and please don't do it while I'm out of town because I can't wait.
Yeah.
I wish you could have been on that. That was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with that conversation.
I had a lot of fun reading it. Like I was telling you guys earlier, I listened to the podcast while I was waiting for the plane to come home, and I started like wanting to retort to some of your comments, and I was, oh shit, no, this podcast is already done.
You should have totally live tweeted.
Yeah, we're talking about our Seth Abramson top 100 NES games of all time list. Homebrew games. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
The last point of order that we have here is to announce our contest winner from the Witch and Wiz contest.
Ooh.
If you left us a review on iTunes, you would be entered to win a digital copy of Witch and Wiz. I think we got like 4 reviews. Woo. So that's like a 400% increase in reviews, I think.
So it's a 25% chance that you're the one that won if you left a review.
So we did a random drawing, and the winner is Dale Coop.
Yay.
Dale Coop. Thank you, Dale Coop. Leaving a damn fine cup of coffee emojis all over our Discord.
Yeah.
When this goes live, I'm going to message you with your free download code. Thank you very much. Thanks for everybody for leaving us a review. That was super cool. All right. Are we about at the point in the podcast where we're going to announce our next game?
Let's do it.
The next game is going to be Witch and Wiz.
Hey.
For the NES. I think it was inevitable we were going to talk about this game. So, Witch and Wiz. It's by Matt Hewson. We have talked about this quite a bit in the Lizard episode. You can find this game at itch.io. This is a puzzle game. I would say, as puzzle games go, it is of moderate difficulty. So if you get your ass kicked by puzzle games, you can beat this one, I think. Connor, you've already torched through this game.
I have been able to complete the game. It is a wonderful game. I am really enjoying going back and looking at the visuals and listening to some of the music. But it is, we'll save it for more discussion for when the actual episode is. Just cut all that out. Just don't even.
Okay.
Don't even.
Yeah,
pass
I'm gonna,
to
I'm
me.
Just gonna cut all.
Just
that
don't
out.
Even no, pass to me.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, you're done. You're done. Next episode, Witch and Wiz. You can find it on itch.io for $10, and that will get you the game and the soundtrack, and I think a couple other things. This has been the Homebrew Game Club podcast. You can find links to our Discord, back episodes of the show, or other social media at homebrewgameclub.com. And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at HBGameClub. If you like the show, please help us out by leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes and telling all your friends about our cool podcast. If you have comments or a suggestion for a game that you would like to hear us talk about, you can shoot us a message on social media, especially our Discord. We have a channel just for that. Or you can email us at homebrewgameclub@gmail.com. Our opening music is by Twee. You can find them on Twitter at TUI2A03, where you can find a link to their SoundCloud. You can follow me, Nick, on Twitter, Instagram, or Video Game Sage. I'm DVERTOV. Bart is on Instagram at clever username needed, no spaces. And Connor is on Twitter at CONORNASH. Tune in next time to the Homebrew Game Club when we will be talking about Witch and Wiz.
Witch and Wiz.
Witch and Wiz. See you then, and thank you for listening.
Woo. Get on it. Get on it. Do, 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 do. Game Boy. Homebrew. Get on it.
What?